Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I that?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Welcome back to Fear, you made it here. It's the thrilling finale of Embodied, in which we'll learn that revenge is best served over a span of 40 weeks. What does that mean? I'm Pun Bandu, I've been your host, and I love my job. You can listen ad-free by joining Realm Unlimited or Realm Plus on Apple Podcasts. Spread the word. Spread the fear.
I hobbled into the office wearing the body of the actress, with my old companion slung across my shoulders. It was fortunate that both of them, Marion and the Major, had crammed their two minds into one body. It was less fortunate that their shared body was bullet-ridden, heavy with the nearness of deactivation. They wheezed, their shared blood running down my back as I kicked the heavy oak door of the office open. And there was my final target. An armchair, high-backed, theatrical, slow to swivel. Jillian knew that I was coming. She must have known I was on my way up, must have gotten every security alert from the entryway to the elevator. She had known that I was coming, and so she had turned her chair away from her desk so her back would be facing me when I entered her office. All so she could execute that slow, villainous turn to face me. The person she'd been waiting for. The person who'd figured her out. She was perfectly polished. If I hadn't known how human she truly was, I would have suspected her of having trademarks under her skin, just like the trademarks under the actress's skin. Jillian rotated in her chair, and her slim-cut white suit gleamed painfully bright against the black leather of the chair, and she opened her mouth to say something clever and cutting. She had thought she could screw me over. She had thought I'd come crawling to her for help, to surrender to her, to tell her that I would play her games if she would just make it all go away. I stood in the doorway, with the weight of a dozen deaths on my conscience and the weight of an almost corpse compressing my spine, and I watched Jillian realize she had thought wrong. I hucked the body that Marion and the Major shared onto her desk. A few drops of their blood spattered across the lapel of that blindingly white suit. Jillian's words died in her throat. I would appreciate some answers. I spoke in the voice of the actress. What have you done? She asked at last, reaching out a trembling hand to feel the skin of the body that lay across her blotter. I settled into the low chair across from her, and I crossed my legs in a parody of the actress's interview pose. I got your little message, I said. Jillian shook her head, her dark, blunt-cut hair shivering with the movement.
Why didn't you just pay the money? You could have just paid. You didn't have to kill.
I laughed, because it was absurd that she should cringe away from death just because it was at her doorstep. She didn't seem to mind when the death was at a distance. She just didn't like having to see it, having to smell it. I laughed at her, and it was my laugh coming out of the actress's mouth. Jillian, to her credit, didn't flinch. She didn't bother to seem surprised or even unnerved, hearing one body speak with two different voices. It was confirmed then. She knew the score. knew who all was living inside this skin. She knew that there were two of us stuck in here.
I didn't kill, I said. Well, I didn't kill this body anyway.
I prodded the body on the desk, and Marion and the Major moaned with one shared pain.
They're still alive, both of them.
Jillian looked up at me sharply, and I bared my own crocodile grin at her.
That's right, I said. I'm not the only one here who's overstuffed. And I'm not the only one here who got your message, either. Pay up, be enslaved, or get recycled. Quite a deal you put together. But I have a feeling you didn't count on both of us getting that offer at the same time. I have a feeling you didn't count on us talking to each other about it. Do I have that right?
Jillian touched the tip of her index finger to one corner of her mouth, then the other. A nervous habit. Good. I had her off her rhythm.
You don't understand, she said. Of course you wouldn't think we would talk about it,
I said, continuing as though she hadn't spoken, because if I didn't ignore her, I would kill her right then and there.
Of course you'd think that we would all be too ashamed of who we are, of what you turned us into. Of course you'd think that you could get away with it.
I was talking too fast, too loud, and inside my head the actress was growing alarmed.
How many double bookings have you arranged here, Jillian? How many of us were you planning to extort for the right to keep bunking together? How many people did you set up to have to share a body, thinking it was all a big mistake?
On the desk, Marion and the Major let out a rattling breath. A drop of their blood slipped from the blotter, began to run toward the edge of the desk. Jillian pushed back her chair frantically, trying to dodge the blood, unaware that her suit was already ruined. Inside my head, the actress spoke.
You need a break. Let me do the talking now.
I hesitated, then ceded control of our body to her. We had agreed to work with each other. We had agreed to dance together as one, rather than fighting for control of this body we shared. No more tragedy of the commons. It was time for this body to be a cooperative. I watched from inside my own mind as my body acted based on the will of someone I had no choice but to trust.
You can save them, the actress said smoothly, if you want to. None of their wounds have to be fatal. You can have them patched right up, upgrade their firmware while you're at it. When they wake up, they'll have forgotten all about your little scheme. Or you can let them die and deal with the fallout that will come when people start asking questions about their disappearance.
Damn, the actress was good. More cutthroat than I'd realized. More cutthroat by half.
If you make this thing right, then maybe you and I don't have to be enemies, hmm? Maybe we can work together to fix all of it.
She finished.
What could you possibly have in mind?
Jillian asked, watching Marion and the Major bleed.
How could we possibly work together?
I didn't know what the actress had in mind. My plan had extended to confrontation, but I was quickly coming to realize that she'd thought three steps ahead. She was negotiating. And I had no idea what she was trying to gain. Something was exhilarating about watching from deep in my mind as the actress manipulated our shared body with such exquisite control. She leaned back in our chair with a grace that I'd never possessed, not even before porting into this form, and winked at Jillian. Winked! As if Marion and the Major weren't bleeding out on Jillian's desk.
Come now, Jillian. What is the one thing that I have that you lack?
Jillian's brow contracted, a line appearing in her otherwise flawless skin. I was glad she hadn't any better an idea than I did about what the actress was offering. She tilted her head, the blunt cut of her dark hair falling away from her porcelain cheek. Inside our mind, I asked, what are you offering her?
I'm not quite sure. I'm bluffing. Are you shitting me? It's not a total bluff. Understanding motivation is a core principle of Stanislavski's teaching.
You're basing this on an acting technique.
An acting technique that took essential human nature and broke down its semantic components, which a serious actor can mine for the stage. Or we can reverse engineer it to understand someone else. We know she wants something, right? That's human nature. We know that her immediate objective is money. That's why she set up this entire scam of double booking people into the same bodies. So if we can figure out her super objective and I can offer her a shortcut to get it, then she'll bite.
That seems pretty thin, as Jillian's eyes widened.
Oh. She sat up, tongue flicking between her lips for a moment. Really? Ha! Did you see that plush?
What about it?
Shh, you're distracting.
I hadn't seen anything except the shift in her body posture. Whatever Jillian thought we were offering had her excited. As if she hadn't noticed, the actress shrugged languidly.
Patch Marion and the Major. Upgrade their firmware, and we'll talk terms. I thought fixing them was your price.
The actress threw back her head and laughed.
Oh, darling, no. That is a demonstration of good faith. You know how much what I'm offering is worth.
Damn, she was good. Even from inside, it sounded like she knew what she was offering. Jillian swiveled in her chair, and the drop of blood on her lapel glistened in the shifting light.
And what about a demonstration of good faith from you? You already have that.
The actress leaned forward in her chair.
If I hadn't taken control, you would be dead by now.
Strictly speaking, I had ceded control because she'd asked, and we'd agreed to share. But considering the deaths that trailed in my wake, it was a good ploy. Jillian touched the tip of her index finger to one corner of her mouth, then the other.
Very well. I'll patch them. But the firmware upgrade waits until we've talked terms.
The actress shrugged again, as if she didn't care, but inside she cursed. What's wrong?
Patching them is hardware only. I wanted her to pull out the firmware gear.
Oh, that was clever. If Jillian brought out her hardware gear, we'd be able to craft a new body in any configuration we wanted. With two bodies, we could unpack ourselves and no longer have to share, except that to port one of us over to that body, we needed the right firmware. If we could get control of it, Jillian would have everything locked to her biometrics. Sure, in movies, you see people cutting off thumbs to use for identification, but actual biometric systems were too sophisticated for that. The drop in blood pressure from amputation caused predictable changes in configuration. No system in the world would unlock from a severed thumb. If we wanted access to the firmware, we needed Jillian to be alive and whole. And I understood why the actress had called me off when I was getting wound up earlier. The urge to kill Jillian and add her to my tally was pretty high. She deserved it. But if I had done that, the actress and I probably would have wound up chained together for eternity. Jillian swiveled her high-back chair away from her desk in a reversal of the way she'd greeted us. She stood, walking to a landscape painting that hung on the wall. A small wooden barn sat in the distant part of a daisy-filled meadow. It was an innocuous painting, the sort that corporate lawyers hung in their offices to make it look like they had personality and taste, but that wouldn't offend any clients. She swung it out to reveal a small safe, as if she'd gone down the villain checklist. I was really surprised you didn't have a fluffy white cat or a Doberman, too. From inside the safe, Jillian pulled a Volman lock. The oblong black handset needed physical contact with both the operator and the system that it was unlocking. There was no spoofing one of those. I was impressed that the actress had managed to get Jillian to produce it. We were one step closer to getting out.
Oh, yeah, she definitely wants a date with someone I know.
Why do you think... Oh. Jillian turned the Volman over, and I have to say that until that moment, I hadn't thought about how much it looked like a dildo.
You'll need to carry them into my laboratory.
The actress stood and put our hands on Marion and the Major. Inside, she said, "Would you mind lifting and carrying her more your things?" "Thanks." But I slid back into control and shifted my grip on Marion and the Major's inert body to heft them into a fireman's carry across my shoulders. I followed Jillian as she walked to a bookcase, hips swaying. She pressed the Volman lock against it and ran her hand down the shaft. The bookcase dissolved into a mist of smart dust, and Jillian waved us through. "Put them on the table." She really had picked up all the villain tropes. Secret bookcase door. The interior had blue lighting behind white wall panels, completely at odds with the wood paneling of the front room. A stainless steel table dominated the center of the room under a streamlined fabric. I'd lowered Marion and the Major's body to the table when something slapped against the back of my neck. I froze, my fists hovering just above the body. Jillian sniffed as she walked around the table. "It really would have been better if you had just paid. But this will work." "Oh, shit." The actress shifted in our skin. "Shit. I can't move."
"I can."
The actress straightened.
"I think I promised her you. Don't worry, I'll..."
My vision dimmed and static hissed, blocking out even the actress's internal voice. Dark. Silence. In the void, I didn't know how much time passed. I had no sensations at all. The sound came back first, a voice at the end of a tunnel behind a curtain of cotton. The actress's practiced, perfect diction wandered down to greet me.
"Appreciate it. I've grown a little fond in our time together."
That was her real voice, but not echoing in my head or issuing from a shared throat. I wasn't in the same body as she was. The sound sharpened. Jillian was speaking.
"I'm glad we could come to an agreement." "Of course. And the Major and Marion?"
Something warm pressed against the top of my head and ran down my back. I opened my eyes. Colors were odd, and I had trouble moving my eyes. The actress stood above me, one hand stroking the top of my head. Her hand was huge. She was huge. I stretched, twisting to look around the room, and stiffened. I had paws. Fluffy white paws. Oh, no. No fucking way. I flexed my paw and claws poked out of each toe. I was a cat. Why not at least a Doberman? How the hell was I gonna kill Jillian as a goddamn fluffy white cat?
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Fresh, never-frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 different options. There's also Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, vegan and veggie options. Also, there are a lot of different add-ons every week. You can get breakfast, you can get an on-the-go lunch, snacks, smoothies. I personally love their lemon ginger turmeric wellness shots. And the fact that they save me so much time. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. It's like having your own personal chef, tailored to your schedule. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/FR50 and use code FR50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code FR50 at factormeals.com/FR50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
It's called toxoplasmosis, and it's what happens when you breathe in too much cat shit. The bacteria itself is called Toxoplasma gondii. The parasitic disease it causes is toxoplasmosis. Toxoplasma gondii lives primarily in cat feces. Cats can catch it from their food, or from other cats, or from the soil or the areas in which they live. They are most susceptible to infection in the first 6 months of life. But the parasite is a beneficial one. The parasite works to keep the cat alive, so the cat might continue spreading it and furthering the parasite's reproductive imperative. In small animals like rodents, exposure to the bacteria can cause symptoms of derangement. The animal, the cat's prey, loses all sense of danger, all capacity to accurately estimate risk or assess threat. Toxoplasmosis literally lulls the prey animal into a false sense of security. Infected creatures will sometimes run up on a cat and try to attack it, hopping helpfully into its paws and jaws. There is a documented correlation between toxoplasmosis and the entrepreneurial mindset. Cat ownership, once considered merely a sign of introversion, may also cause some people to run fearlessly into the devouring maw of capitalism. These humans look at the economy, red and tooth and claw, and decide that, unlike all those other losers, they will be the ones to win fame and fortune. They'll be the next Rockefeller, the next Murdoch, the next Musk. They'll change the world with their app, or their snake oil, or their magic mop that leaves no streaks. Dog people, therefore, should be understood as pack animals, followers, eager to please, never happier than when receiving praise. Cat people, by contrast, are ambitious. Cat people do not care what you think. Cat people do not have time for the sense of anxiety you gnaw on like an old bone. They have things to accomplish, traditions to knock down, established wisdom to trample over. Cat people will sneak up behind you on silent feet, invisible until the moment they decide to stretch themselves so wide that you can no longer ignore them. In the vast majority of human body plans, of course, Toxoplasma gondii is perfectly harmless. Up to half the world's humans can be infected and experience no symptoms whatsoever. But for a few, like the very elderly, or the very compromised, or the very pregnant, it's extremely dangerous. In these people, it can cause flu-like symptoms, fever, chills, swollen lymph nodes, body aches, and in some cases, seizures. It can even transfer from parent to child if the parent is incubating a child inside their body. Sometimes those children are born with encephalitis, swollen retinas, or nasal malformations. Revenge is a dish best served over a span of approximately 40 weeks. And cats are notorious for playing with their food. My life as a cat was not the prison my enemies hoped it would be. First, the cat life can be very comfortable. The first week, all I did was sleep. I slept for hours and hours, and no one bothered me. I felt the quality of my sleep sinking deeply into my consciousness, which was blessedly uncluttered now. I didn't have to share my claws or tail with anyone. I could flick and flounce and jump and pounce and never have to worry about including anyone else in the process. I could make decisions on my own, without negotiation or compromise. Walk all over the piano? Fine. Bury myself in fresh laundry? Sure. Press gently but firmly on the weakest point of someone's bladder? Delightful. Then becoming a cat, I became my own person. Humans used to be this way, alone in their own heads, selfish, blissful. The animal brain is more honest than the modern one. I've come to believe that now. There is nothing purer than my pursuit of a small thing wriggling in the grass, whether it's a mouse or a child. Haraway was right. The dichotomy was never between human and machine, between organic and synthetic. The real fight existed between humanity and literally everything else on the planet, whether it was the animals or the atmosphere. Although some animals can experience shame or anxiety or depression, humans are the only animals to experience self-loathing. This is because they have so very much to loathe in themselves. Until I had my new eyes and my new ears, I didn't understand this. I thought my former species had some important thing to do, some startling new achievement waiting just around the corner of the century. But as my eyes adjusted to new wavelengths of light and as my ears learned to hear the thrum of their blood, I witnessed the truth. Humans have no reason to be alive. They contribute nothing to the network. All their accomplishments are for themselves. Their songs and structures, their art and artifice. They never benefit anyone or anything else. Humans don't contribute. It's a bit of a wank, really. The Mona Lisa is no more beautiful than me licking my own genitals. Unlike Toxoplasma gondii, humans are in a parasitic relationship with their planet that yields no symbiosis. They are bad for us. As the man said, four legs good, two legs bad. And this is what I thought to myself as I flounced up the stairs between Jillian's legs. This is what I thought when her round, full body fell so heavily down the stairs. Do you know that gravid and gravity came from the same root word? Well, now you do. It's so funny the things I still remember. Soon, I know, I will forget. I've already forgotten so many words. So many things I thought were so important. But I never forgot a face. And I never forgot a grudge.
This has been a Cereal Box production of Embodied. Written by Yoon-Ha Lee, Mer Lafferty, S.L. Huang, Malka Older, Gwenda Bond, Max Gladstone, Fran Wild, Sarah Gailey, Mary Robinette Cole, and Madeline Ashby. Narrated by Exi Sands. Produced by Lydia Shama. Executive producers Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Audio produced by Amanda Rose Smith. Original musical theme by Amanda Rose Smith.
Text copyright 2019, Cereal Box, Inc. Production copyright 2019, Cereal Box, Inc.
You're listening to Fear Embodied, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.
Embodied is written by Fran Wild, Max Gladstone, Sarah Gailey, Gwenda Bond, Madeline Ashby, Malka Older, Mer Lafferty, Mary Robinette Cole, and S.L. Huang. Performed by Xe Sands. Produced by Lydia Shama. Executive producers Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Audio produced an original theme by Amanda Rose Smith. Fear is produced by Mary Osadolihi and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Nicole Kreuter. Executive produced by Molly Barton, Julian Yap, and Marcy Wiseman. Hosted by Pun Bandu. Audio editing by Corey Barton. Original theme by Hashem Osadolihi, featuring drummer Andrew Niven and mixed by Max Kuttner. Cover art by Kendall Thomas. Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.